Okay, I'm calling the meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy to order. Today is Tuesday, February 27th, 2024, and the time is now 11 o'clock in the morning. We are joined here by Representative Shragi, Representative McKay, Representative Wright, Representative Baker. I am told we will. There are other legislators on the way. So myself, I'm Representative Rauscher. I am chair, and we do have a quorum. Okay, I would like to thank the House Records Secretary, Cale Brown, and our LIOR moderator, Zachary Lawhorn, and my committee aide, Craig Valdez, for all they do for this committee. Before we begin, if everybody would silence their cell phones or any other electronics, that includes those that are in the gallery watching. If we have a presentation today, which may be kind of tricky because the questions need to go through the chair, and the chair will be part of the presentation. So the answers go back through the chair. So I don't know how that'll all work, but either way, we'll figure it out, right? Today's agenda. Anybody have any questions before we begin? Just thought I'd make that option out there. So today's agenda. We're here to discuss, I believe, a landmark piece of legislation, HB 368. It's an act relating to clean energy standards and a clean energy transfer tax credit and providing for an effective date. We are now joined by Representative Armstrong. This bill is a critical response to the looming gas availability shortage and the uncertainty surrounding our energy future, positioning Alaska at the forefront of a provocative energy management sustainability problem. This is the first time HB 368 will be presented in this committee. It's my privilege to introduce it following my sponsor's statement. Craig Valdez, who is my staff and my committee aide, he will be offering the detailed overview of the sectional. And today's goal is not to do anything but to inform everybody on the bill, give an inside look at what it was intended to do, and to have a frank and open conversation about the piece of legislation as far as the questions that you all may have. We are joined by Representative Prox. And so we are here to take suggestions, hear both sides of the debate, and work collaboratively for an ultimate decision on how this bill should move forward. So at this time, I am going to go to the sponsor statement. HB 38, if you don't mind, I'll just start. Is there any questions before? No? All right. HB 368, in the wake of a looming gas availability shortage in the Cook Inlet Basin, critical for powering Alaska's rail belt from Homer to Fairbanks, this committee bill on clean energy standards and a clean energy transferable tax credit serves as a cornerstone for our energy policy. It is an urgent and needed measure, pivotal for steering Alaska towards a sustainable and secure energy future amidst the challenges. This legislation not only signals a shift to a more diversified and resilient, in our opinion, energy mix, but also establishes a strategic framework for... Everybody silence their phone but me. All right. I have to apologize.
George.
Right? So my apologies. I guess I buy the donuts, right? So, by setting forth clean energy standards, we are crafting a blueprint for innovation and transition, guiding our state toward needed energy solutions that will broaden and help diversify energy and will keep Alaska economically viable. The introduction of a clean energy transferable tax credit is a key feature, a feature in this bill, designed to act as a catalyst for clean energy projects. This initiative is paramount in its importance as it opens up avenues for leveraging both federal and private investment in Alaska's energy sector. It creates a fertile environment for public and private partnerships, ensuring that the path to energy independence is both collaborative and multifaceted. Additionally, this bill acknowledges the role of existing low sulfur coal facilities, incorporating them into the broader framework of the clean energy solutions to enhance our contribution to Alaska's energy portfolio. As a conservative advocate, I highlight this bill's crucial role in stabilizing the market, essential for investors across sectors, including the Cook Inlet Gas, clean energy, manufacturing, and heavy industry. By establishing a consistent policy framework, we mitigate investment risks and ensure we mitigate investment risks and ensure ratepayers aren't burdened by cost. This legislation instills confidence among stakeholders and showcasing our dedication to a predictable market that attracts investment, advancing Alaska's energy transition and economic prosperity. I call upon my colleagues right here in the room and partners from all sectors to support this vital legislation, to give comment to it. Together, we can establish a stable and diversified energy market that benefits all Alaskans, ensuring our state remains a beacon of innovation, economic strength, and stable growth for generations to come. Right now, I'm going to turn the discussion and presentation over to my staffer, Craig Valdez. If you would go through the sectional analysis for us, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. For the record, this is Craig Valdez, staff to Representative Rauscher. Get us started here. I won't belabor these first couple slides too much. I think everyone on the committee understands the geographical area we're talking about, but Homer, South Central Alaska, and Golden Valley Electric Association are all part of the rail belt currently, and this would be a bill that focuses primarily on those. Though, to note, the tax credit portion of this bill is a statewide tax credit. It's not just the rail belt. As we saw in earlier presentation by NSTAR here in House Energy and in the Joint Resources Committee hearing, this is the combined utility annual demands. As you can see in the kind of red shaded bars, the higher risk untracked demands going forward. And this graph kind of starting in that 2029 section, and then in the following one from NSTAR, also presented to House Energy, the earliest undesignated gas supply gap starting in 2025, which will be next year. Just going to give some background for this. Also seeing the historical demand and uses, you can see that electric power, commercial, ONG field operations, we're no longer using the fertilizer plant or Kenai LNG. Coming from the NSTAR presentation, the considerations they included in their slides was that none of the options that they presented meet the LNG demands for the four-year milestone, which would be the quarter four, 2027, when the gas gaps starts to accelerate. Also, their key consideration was the second worst thing for Alaska is to import LNG. The worst thing to do nothing is to do nothing. So that brings us to HB 368, legislative response. House Bill 368 is a proactive legislative measure aiming to establish a clean energy portfolio standard and introduce clean energy tax credits to leverage private funding and to close that gap in energy. Diversifying Alaska's energy portfolio with clean energy sources not only extends the life of Cook Inlet's natural gas reservoirs for critical heating needs, but also offers gas producers a definitive roadmap for the future, enhancing their ability for strategic planning and investment. Kind of the two broad parts of HB 368 are the clean energy standards, which set forth a legislative framework to establish clean energy standards for electric utilities in Alaska. It mandates a phased increase in the use of clean energy sources, aiming for utilities to achieve specific targets in their net electricity sales from clean energy sources by certain deadlines. The second part, as I mentioned, is the Clean Energy Transferable Tax Credit, introduces a mechanism for clean energy transferable tax credit to incentivize investments in the infrastructure and production of that energy. So kind of getting started into the sectional analysis, we'll start with sections 1 through 4. Section 1 adds to the uncodified law of the state of Alaska, which establishes the purpose of this act, which is to set a clean energy portfolio standard for electric utilities, mandating increasing percentages of their net electricity sales from renewable or carbon neutral sources. Section 2 amends Alaska Statute 4205-381 by adding a new subsection, which introduces mandating a uniform service rate for transmission of clean energy generated after July 1st, 2024. Section 3 amends AS 4205-780A amends that by mandating that integrated resource plan must now identify the most cost-effective strategies for the energy network to satisfy the clean energy standard. Section 4 amends Alaska Statute 4205-785A by adding new subsection 4, stipulating the construction of large energy facilities may not be detrimental to a load-serving entity's ability to meet the clean energy standard. Section 5, which gets us into the main part of the clean energy portfolio standard, creates new section 4205.900. Subsection A, establishing the clean energy portfolio standard, detailing requirements and percentages for the clean energy sources, specifies the minimum percentages of clean energy sources in the utility sales portfolio, the gradual increase over a specified timeline. Subsection B allows a power purchase agreement to be included when calculating CES percentages and requirements for that. Subsection C allows for distributed energy systems to satisfy clean energy standards. Subsection D bases clean energy standards compliance on historical data and industry standards set by the RCA, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Subsection E mandates the accounting system to track use of clean energy, verify compliance, and to track energy consumption displaced by energy efficiency investments. Subsection F sets requirements for the RCA, or Regulatory Commission of Alaska, to develop a proxy for net energy from displaced energy systems to be tracked through the above-mentioned accounting system. Subsection G allows for clean energy standards to be met by energy efficiency investments, including in consumer efficiency upgrades. Subsection H directs the RCA to establish regulations for load-serving entity to opt out of the clean energy standard under certain requirements, but denies eligibility for a utility to receive clean energy transferable tax credits if it does so. Subsection I directs the RCA to adopt a minimum standard for transmission lines before the clean energy standard are required, 10 years for step one after lines complete, and 25 years with the transmission lines built out to encompass the entire road system under the grid plan for step two. Continuing on to section 4205.905, subsection A details reporting requirements for utilities, including the submission of annual reports demonstrating compliance. Subsection B assigns a role to the Regulatory Commission in monitoring and verifying compliance with the standard and setting those standards. And subsection C empowers the RCA to investigate compliance with the standard. Continuing on, section 4205.910, the Clean Energy Transferable Tax Credits, allows for a load-serving entity to apply for the Clean Energy Transferable Tax Credits set to the credit amount of 0.2 cents per kilowatt hour, and it defines what utility entities would qualify. Section 2 defines the facilities that would qualify under those entities. Section 5 continued. We have Section 4205915, the waivers. Allows for, and it's the subsection A, allows for and set standards for the RCA to waive requirements to meet the CES under certain requirements. Subsection B sets out the standards or events or circumstances outside of the load-serving entity's reasonable control. Subsection C sets standards for a good cause of noncompliance. D restricts eligibility to apply for clean energy transferable tax credits while under a waiver. Section 4205920, exemptions. Exempts individual load-serving entities from compliance if the overall grid is meeting the clean energy portfolio standard. Subsection B allows for exemption for load-serving entity from its first noncompliance. I have fine in there, but that is a typo, but from its first noncompliance period. Section 4205925 adds net billing. Subsection A, set standard for net billing and export rate credit. Subsection B, charges the Regulatory Commission of Alaska to establish regulations to set a export rate credit annually based on seasonal time and time variations and other relevant factors. Section 4205930, additional energy resources. Subsection A requires the AEA to submit a report at least every 5 years to the legislature to recommend if any new technologies are to be added to the definition of clean energy. That's good. Then we get into section 4205935, which are definitions. This goes over definition of clean energy standard, compliance period, distributed energy systems, interconnected electric energy transmission network, load serving entity, the rail belt, renewable energy resources, and transmission network constraint. Which brings us to section 6. This section amends Alaska Statute 4245110A stipulate that revenue from clean energy credits or recovered heat is not to be included. Section 7, this modifies Alaska Statute 43, so we are now leaving the main part and going into the tax title under Alaska. Modifies Alaska Statute 4398 is amended by adding a new section, the Clean Energy Transferable Tax Credit, Article 5. Subsection A sets the foundation for the Clean Energy Transferable Tax Credit, sets transparency standards for those provided the tax credit. Subsection B allows Clean Energy Transferable Tax Credits to be sold, assigned, exchanged, conveyed, or otherwise transferred in whole or in part. Subsection C allows the credit to be used to offset taxes in Alaska Statute 1025, which would be the utilities and telecommunications taxes, and Title 43, which is where the vast majority of Alaska state taxes reside under statute. Subsection D instructs the Department of Revenue to adopt regulations necessary for administering the tax credits. Subsection E sets the requirement that a clean energy transferable tax credit be used within 5 years. Subsection F restricts a clean energy transferable tax credit from reducing a person's tax liability below zero. And subsection G allows holders of clean energy tax credit certificates to combine or split their credits for transactions like sales or transfer. The department must issue new certificates for combined or split credits detailing their amounts and expiration dates. This process doesn't extend the credit's validity period, which was set at 5 years. Section 8 and 9. Section 8, AS4483940 is amended by adding a new subsection. Mandates the authority must submit, which would be the AEA, must submit an annual report to the legislature first regular session detailing progress on rural clean energy development. This report should evaluate current initiatives, identify needed infrastructure, and assess the feasibility and costs for future projects. And Section 9, simply the effective date clause, July 1st, 2024. Going in to the end, the bottom line, House Bill 368's impact on Alaska's future. Energy security strengthens Alaska energy independence by diversifying supply sources, reducing reliance on cooked inlet gas or upcoming liquefied natural gas imports. economic growth, stimulates the economy of creating jobs in the clean energy sector and attracting industries seeking sustainable operations. Public-private partnerships encourages innovation, innovative collaboration, driving both clean energy initiatives and broader industrial development and legislative leadership. Showcases Alaska's proactive approach in energy policy, setting a benchmark for sustainable and forward-thinking legislation. And that would be all for the sectional analysis and presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Valdez. Appreciate it. So, are there any questions on the presentation or the sectional analysis? Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Are we going to go through more presentations or start debating the bill?
For today, that's basically it. This is the give an overview, let everybody take the piece of legislation now that they've heard the sectional analysis, acquainted with why it was written, the thought behind it, what we're trying to accomplish. You could go on your way and come up with your we will visit this again. This is an overview to give you an idea of what we're after. If you have any questions, you have any comments, you have anything you'd like to add, I'm more than willing to listen today. Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Rauscher, and to the chair. So just as I review the bill and I'm trying to get myself acquainted to it, thank you for the introduction on this.
Sure.
A couple of questions that I think stand out to me that I'd be curious to get more information on. I guess the first ones are related to the fiscal notes. I noticed that the first fiscal note is indeterminate. Mm-hmm. And I just read here that the revenue impacts of this bill cannot be determined at this time due to the short time frame to prepare this fiscal note. And then skipping on a little bit, this bill would have an indeterminate negative impact on overall tax revenue. So I'm just curious, and I don't need an answer right now, but hopefully the Department of Revenue is able to provide us a more accurate fiscal note with a little bit more time. I'd be very curious to see that because I don't have any idea whether we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars or are we talking millions of dollars. I think that would be a very good question to have answered. And then my second question relates to the third fiscal note. And I see that in the third paragraph, it talks about this bill altering how the RCA calculates power cost, and then thus the RCA would need to revise regulations addressing power cost equalization calculations. And I'm just curious if this would have any impact on PCE funds that are being distributed, you know, the health of the fund, and then also the actual payment calculations to communities. I think those would be hopefully there's not a huge impact there, but I just noticed the fiscal notes and I haven't had the chance to dig in or hear from the relevant departments, and I think those are questions I would really like to have answered before we were to take any sort of action on this bill.
Through Representative Shragi, I appreciate the questions. They're out there, I get it. And I believe they believe I don't know how to identify these separately, but opponent number 2417, I think that's basically what they're saying is with the new computations, they're probably going to have to hire somebody to be able to take the numbers and crunch the numbers because they will be different. As far as PCE, I don't think we're changing PCE, but I think anything that happens along the rail belt, whether it lowers the costs of the ratepayers per watt, I think all that has to do with PCE and the calculations going there forward. And so I think until that's fully vetted through them is why they have an indeterminate number on how this could work that way. And I don't know if they will ever come up with a solid number in the future on that, but I can tell you that that's probably some of the things that I see that they're trying to say, wait a minute, we take just a little bit look it's only been out here for less than a week, so. Yes.
Oh, just quick follow-up, if I may.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. And to the chair, yeah, I completely appreciate the lack of the short time frame and therefore not having some clear answers. I think if possible, when this bill comes up next, I would love to have the Department of Revenue and maybe someone from the RCA online to just speak to the bill. I'd appreciate that if possible.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then there's tax credits in there. They have to figure out that. It gets a little crazy for them. So I'm sure it's not easy for them to come up with a number. Just my own opinion.
Just to add to that, what as staff representative Rauscher, we will have each of those in front of the committee to go over their relevant sections of the bill.
Thank you.
Anybody else have a question right now, Mr. Representative Brox?
Yes, thank you. I'm trying to understand how urgent or if this is, if we're doing things in the right step. Do we have to get something out for, I guess you're calling it clean energy standards, in order to capture some federal money that's going to be here in 6 months, 2 years? How's that?
To answer your question, Representative, I cannot answer your question because I am not the administration, because I or the AEA or others, but I can tell you this is. The governor would like to see investors come into the state of Alaska and invest in projects. And I think what the governor is hoping for is a roadmap that says, hey, this is where we're headed. You know, and that's why we would like investors to come in. And this is what we'd like to spend some time, money, energy on these kind of projects around the state. And I think that what they're looking for is something tangible that they could point to, that they could say, this is where the state's going, and this is where we'd like you to help us out.
Mm-hmm. So follow up to that. For instance, well, there's two big things that would seem to me that we need to have sorted out first. Either the gas line from the North Slope is going to move forward or it isn't. And the other one would be that the interties, the transmission system, is going to move forward or it isn't. Because that would be main drivers of the ability to meet these standards.
Representative Brox, when you say intertie, are you talking about the transmission line
right.
upgrade?
Mm-hmm.
If the percentages, the threshold percentages, and the years. This all starts after the transmission lines are built, by the way.
Right.
So they're not dependent upon, you know, looking at this bill. We should wait and see if the transmission lines ever get built. This comes into play after the transmission lines are built.
Right.
Not all of it. A majority of it comes into play for the utility companies after the transmission lines are built. It does not dictate who builds them, whether it's state, federal, private. Utility companies, it does not dictate who builds the transmission line. This says that the percentages come into play after that.
Okay. And there isn't a rubric, I guess, right now. Apparently, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska is going to be determining, is the priority cost, is the priority CO2 reduction, or how are they going to come to some sort of process for making these decisions of which process to go, which projects to adopt? Is that left up to the RCA, or is that, does that need to be stipulated by statute?
I could find that answer out for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for indulging the overview and we're going to set this aside. It's going to be heard again. If you guys want to take a look at it, I'm going to give you about maybe a week to offer your amendments, talk to whoever you need to, and be able to come up with improvements that you might see might be needed, or that could be of use. So I guess what we're going to do is call it probably Wednesday night, you think?
Yeah, Wednesday night of next week.
5 o'clock? So if those could be in by next week, 5 o'clock Wednesday, that's a week from now. You get a chance to get familiar with the with what we're doing, what this bill says, and come up with some suggestions.
Mr. Chairman, this is sort of on the scope of the ACES tax things for the oil companies, and then that didn't work out as well as we'd hoped. And then, what was it, SB 91? No, wrong one. Anyway, there was then the correction to that, and that didn't work out as well as we'd hoped. And I'm wondering, I'm concerned, I guess, that we're perhaps making the same procedural error in rushing into this.
Representative Prox, have you read the part about what you're talking about, tax credits?
Yes.
And you find those to be similar as the oil tax credit?
No. The whole scope of the decision as far as the impact of the state, impact to the state, that we're somewhat dictating policy or the direction that things will take. And I don't know if a week for amendments is enough to really get the input we need and to understand this. As far as the amendment deadline.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Representative Shragi.
Yeah, to Rauscher, maybe just a thought to consider. I don't know what the schedule is like for next week, and sorry, to the chair. Is it possible maybe to have a hearing on Tuesday with RCA and Department of Revenue online? And I don't know if there's anyone else that Representative Prox would want to have online for that discussion. That way we could maybe get a little bit more information ahead of the amendment deadline on Wednesday.
Representative Shragi, we plan on having a lot of people testify on this, okay, to give us their overview, their view, their opinion on where it may need to be improved, or whether it will work or whether it won't work in their opinion, and to what degree, what parts of it will or will not work. So the answer is yes.
And follow up, if I may, to the chair, thank you. I think that might inform us on Tuesday whether or not we really do have a lot of question and concern. It may be that they're able to answer many of our questions and we're satisfied and we can just move forward as you outlined, or if there turns out to be more question and substance to be debated, then potentially we could decide at that time to push the deadline back. Just offering.
I have no qualms with pushing the deadline back a little more if needed. That's fine. We just can't go too far because there's two houses to get through. Thank you very much for your comment. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Rauscher.
Yep. Any other comments? All right. Thank you very much for attending. This time I'm going to adjourn the House Special Committee on Energy at 11:33.